So do you like a good cup of coffee? I mean, a good cup of Joe, a nice little swig of liquid energy, a mug of bean juice, a small lava of Java. I mean, you really like some coffee. There's a sign that I'm sure is hanging in a company break room somewhere, and the sign says this: safety first. Just kidding. Coffee's first. Safety is like third or fourth. A caffeine-correlated coffee mug says something similar. My contribution to workplace safety is having a cup of coffee in the morning, keeping it safe. Who knew? You don't have to plant a virus in the mothership to save the world. You just have to have a cup of coffee. That's what you need the most. Now, what if there really was a cup like that, though? What if there was a cup that could save the world? Now, I'm not talking about a cup like the Grail Knight protected in the canyon of the crescent moon. No, I'm talking about a cup that no one can ever take away from you. A cup that you can drink from over and over again all day long. That your heart and your mind and your soul, your emotions, your attitudes can drink from all day long. And not a cup that saves the world like Mikey or Lava Girl or Peter Venkman saved the world, but a cup that saves your world. That what's happening in your life, that taking a drink from this cup can change your fear, your worry, your anger, your frustration, your apathy, your overthinking, or whatever it may be. I don't know about you, but I could use a swig from a cup like that. We continue our summer series called Pleasant Places, where we're looking at a prayer that King David prayed about 3,000 years ago. And throughout this prayer, this psalm, there are places throughout this psalm. Not physical places, but places for our hearts and our minds to go to. Places that are very real for our emotions and our spiritual heart. And this prayer was written in a time of trouble. Something was going wrong in David's life. And as this moment of trouble came up, he began to pray and he found safety, he found security, he found salvation, he found satisfaction in the confidence of a cup. What kind of cup is that? Well, let's find out. We'll be looking at Psalm 16, beginning in verse 5. Our message today is called Safe Place. A safe place. And King David says this: "The Lord is the portion of my inheritance and my cup." Last year, an heiress to a fortune of more than $27 million made an announcement that she was going to invite 50 random strangers to help her brainstorm how to spend the money. This past week, they have released their plan for spending the money. And those 50 strangers that she put together in a council, they were people of different ages, different income levels, different education levels, and shocker, they had different attitudes about how the money should be spent. So they came up with kind of three principles that kind of motivated them and drove them behind how they wanted the money to be spent. And one of those principles goes like this: we want everyone to live well together. They wanted to spend the money in such a way that people would live well together. Now, my guess is their plan's pretty good. I'm sure that money is going to do a lot of great things to move in some very positive directions and help people live well together. But here's the thing about an inheritance. An inheritance, by definition, is something that is given, something that is left upon death. And so even if you have $27 million to your name right now, you're going to have to leave it. And even if you're the person that receives $27 million, you're going to have to use it, you're going to have to spend it, you're going to have to invest it, but you too still will have to leave it. So whether you're the leaver or the receiver, the same thing is true. You will die. Death cannot be escaped. That means that every human being needs more than $27 million. Because $27 million will not be enough. It's not enough. Because when you die, you cannot take it with you. That means that we need something more than an inheritance of money or an inheritance of land or investments. And we need something more than just a Stanley Cup or a Yeti Cup or a Holy Grail religious relic cup. We need something more. And what do you need? Well, remember who we're talking about here. We're talking about King David. Someone who understood power, prestige, someone who had a big inheritance, someone who had a lot of heritage. King David had all that a person could have in this life. And yet, what does he pray? He says, "The Lord is my inheritance. The Lord is my cup." No matter who we are, no matter what side of the tracks we grew up on, no matter where we're born in the world, no matter what happens to us, human life is filled with changes and challenges. Human life is filled with troubles and tragedies. Kids grow up, jobs are lost, governments don't always do everything right, health fades, people that we love die. These are realities. And there's a gazillion other changes and other challenges that we all face in life. And David knew all about that. David had experienced war, murder, death, adultery. He had experienced all kinds of sin and evil. And sometimes the sin and evil was his own. The sin and evil were things he was doing to his family. Things that he was doing to his friends. David was about 61 years old when he wrote Psalm 16, this prayer. He died when he was 70. So here we are, the last decade of his life, through all that he had been through. And as he neared and passed, way past middle age, by the way, I don't know if you've seen this recently, but the average person lives to be 76, so the world has lied to us. Your midlife crisis is not at 50, it's at 38. Just to give perspective, right? That's helpful. It's helpful for me. So David is 61, or about 61 here, and so he's experienced a lot. And in this moment, he's not deconstructing his faith. He's not saying, well, God, you're not all you're cracked up to be. No, in fact, when he has everything that most people would want in life, in this moment, David is digging down deep and saying, you know what? Without a shadow of a doubt, I have nothing else. The power, the education, the sports, the Hallmark movie marriages, the Disney movie family, all of those things, they're fine. They can have their place, but they will fail, they will fade, and none of those things can keep you from death. So in his moment of trouble, in his moment when everything felt like it was falling apart, he's loudly whispering to his heart, "You are safe with God." In the midst of everything that he's dealing with, he reminds his heart, your inheritance, your portion, your cup, your lot, all of this is with God and God alone. He is the ultimate salvation of his life and the ultimate salvation of his death. David was not confused. He was confident. Got any trouble in your life right now? Is there anything you're struggling with? Anything that's frustrating you out of your mind? Anything that's breaking your heart? First and most, in the midst of that trouble and that struggle, is the one true sovereign God your inheritance and your portion and your cup. I mean, can you say what David's saying? Can you pray what David's praying? Is God really who and what you have the most? look, $27 million, I mean, I could use it, you know, right now, be nice. But it won't be enough. It won't be enough because only God and God alone can satisfy the deepest part of who we are. Listen, we all have things that we deal with in life, right? Your kids may be lazy, they may be rebellious, your spouse may be impossible, your health may be painful, your job may be stressful. Things in the country may not be going the way you want them to go. But even if all of those things were fixed, the deepest part of who you are would still not be safe and still not be satisfied. Because the human heart has been designed to enjoy and embrace and exist with and on and in God and God alone. And David knew that, and he knew that existence produced something. And what does it produce? Listen to what he prays next, verse 5. You support my lot. Now that doesn't mean that God gave David some money so he can go buy a lot of honey land somewhere, okay? This picture here is seen a little better as we bring in some other translations of the Bible. NIV puts it this way, you make my lot secure. The New Living Translation, you guard all that is mine. And the Amplified Classic, you hold and maintain my lot. David wasn't stumbling over his words like George McFly going, God is my density. No, he knew God was his destiny. There was no confusion. See, David had faced wild animals. God had rescued him. David faced a wild giant, and God rescued him. David faced the wildness of his own sin, and God had rescued him. And David knew that God ultimately was going to rescue him from eternal death, that he would have eternal life. David knew that God was his destiny. So in the middle of his trouble, in the middle of everything not going right, he is loudly whispering to his soul, you are safe with God. You're safe with God. You may not be safe here. You may not be safe with everything that's happening around you, but you are safe with God. His portion, his inheritance, his cup, his lot was completely wrapped up in God and God alone. Therefore, no matter what happened to him here in this world, his real world, the state and status and eternal life of his heart and mind and soul was saved, could keep being saved, and one day will be fully and finally saved. That kind of safety, that kind of security, that kind of salvation, that kind of satisfaction, it comes with hope. Great hope. What kind of hope? A hope that is greater than our trouble. In light of all the uncertainty and chaos surrounding the news and social media outlets today revolving around the presidential debate, I thought it might be good for us to hear some words from about 400 years ago. So if they're 400 years old, plus 400 plus years old, that means that they've been true for every single presidential election that's ever happened. And they're still true. And they're from Martin Luther, and they go like this. Did we in our own strength confide? Our striving would be losing. We're not the right man on our side, the man of God's own choosing. Dost ask who that may be? Christ Jesus, it is he. Lord Sabaoth his name, from age to age the same. That means Jesus is the high General, King, Crown Prince of the armies of heaven, from age to age, the same every single election in any country, any time, Jesus reigns. And then Luther wrote this, and he must win the battle. He must. You know, I love the title of that song, A Mighty Fortress Is Our President. A mighty fortress is our governor. A mighty fortress is our pastor. A mighty fortress is our coach. No, because none of those people are. Not a parent, not a grandparent, not a husband, not a wife, not a child. There is no one who is a mighty fortress, an eternal fortress, never lacks strength other than God and God alone. It's why we put our hope in Him. A mighty fortress is our God. Why? Because what He's accomplished in Jesus Christ, because Jesus will, must win the battle. Do we need to pray for our country? Absolutely. Do we need to pray for all the different elections of this year? Absolutely. Do we need to be prayerful about voting, first of all? Please be sure you vote. And the way that we vote? Absolutely. Do we need to be foolishly worried and afraid? Absolutely not. Dear Christian, who is our God? Can we be worried and frustrated? Sure, we're human. Should we be afraid? Never. A mighty fortress is our God. That's never changed. It never will change. David knew that. It's why he prayed the way that he prayed. Long before Jesus was born in a manger, David knew the promises. David knew the prophecies, and they all came true. The reason we should not be foolishly worried or afraid is because Jesus must win the battle because He's already won the war. The war against sin, the worst thing that could possibly happen to anyone anywhere, is to die in their sin. Sin is the worst thing. Sin is the worst thing. Not who gets elected, not what happens at the hospital, not what happens to your bank account, not what happens with your kids, not what happens in your marriage. All of those things may be connected to sin. All those things may be bad, and there could be some difficulties. But the worst thing is to die in sin. And the battle, the war for sin, has been fought and won by Jesus Christ. And victory has been secured. How? Through a cup. Paul was writing the church at Corinth, and he said this: He made him, God made Jesus, He made him who knew no sin to be sin in our behalf, as our substitute, in our stead, so that we might become the righteousness of God in Him. Jesus took our sin on Himself to make a way for us to be right with God, to make the only way for us to be right with God. Stephen Lee says this: Jesus drank the cup of God's wrath for us so that He could extend the cup of God's fellowship to us. It might include suffering, but not wrath. Don't miss that. Just because you get the fellowship of the cup of God doesn't mean life will be easy and peachy. Just because you turn from sin and receive Jesus and begin to follow Him doesn't mean that everything in life is going to go well. There may be suffering. In fact, can I just say there will be suffering, because suffering is part of being human, but it's definitely part of being Christian. There may be suffering, but not wrath. We don't get wrath anymore. Now we get God. It's great news. We don't get wrath anymore. Now we get God. Guess what? Nothing that happens in November will ever change that. We don't get wrath anymore. We get God. We may get a disease, but we don't get wrath. We may get difficulty, but we don't get wrath. We may get suffering, but we don't get wrath. Why? Because Jesus has drank the cup. And then Stephen Lee says this: This is the cup we drink now and forever. So this prayer from David is kind of a foreshadowing of the cup of Jesus. This cup of wrath that Jesus downed for us is the only way that God can become our inheritance and our cup and our portion. It's the only way for us to get to God. And David knew that, and that's why he prayed. Again, listen to it again. You support my lot. His hope was here. His hope was in God. The hope of his salvation, the hope of his safety, the hope of his security, the hope of his satisfaction were completely wrapped up in his inheritance and in his cup, and his inheritance and his cup was God. And that hope that he had in God was always going to be greater than any trouble that he was facing in life. Can you say that? Can you say that God is your inheritance and your cup in such a way that he is always greater and the hope in him is always greater than any trouble you face? Alexander the Great was going on a big expedition, and before he left, he gave away all of his gold. And someone asked him, what are you keeping for yourself? And this was his response, the hope of greater and better things. Gave away the gold because the hope of greater and better things was more valuable. More than 300 years ago, Thomas Brooks responded to those words from Alexander and said this, a Christian will part with anything rather than with his hope. He knows that hope will keep the heart both from aching and breaking, from fainting and sinking. He knows that hope is a beam of God, a spark of glory, and that nothing shall extinguish it until the soul is filled with glory. Listen, I know that most days I don't feel that. And I'm just assuming maybe you do too. You don't feel glory in your heart. We feel a lot of other things, right? But the promise of the gospel, the promise of what is found in Jesus Christ, is that, dear Christian, you will get that glory. You'll get it. You'll get it partly in these days, but then one day, the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ, you will know full and free and forever. And that hope is not wishful thinking. The cup of wrath that Jesus drank down, it's not a fairy tale. See, the cross guaranteed that our faith and our hope are real. And the resurrection from the dead has guaranteed that our faith and our hope will one day be sight. This is not legend. This is not myth. This is not fairy tale. There are tangible, actual, historical realities that Jesus has accomplished. Spiritual power that Jesus has accomplished. And that's why, even long before Jesus came, his confidence in God stirred David to say, you know what? If my cup is with God, I am safe. I'm safe. Can you whisper that to your soul? With confidence that you truly are safe in and with God? Listen to what David prays next. Verse 6. The measuring lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. When I was just a wee lad, my mom and dad bought a lot in a neighborhood just outside of town. It was a cool neighborhood, cool big lots, and got some house plans, and you know, we were going to go live out in this neighborhood. Boy, I was stoked. Man, this is great. It's fantastic. And we'd go out there. Gosh, I felt like maybe a year, but it was months and months. We'd go out there almost every week because we had to keep the grass cut on the first part, and then we were always clearing, you know, things along the lines and clearing the lot out a little bit. And there was this one tree up in the right corner, and it was all twisted and gnarled. It kind of like a camel's back a little bit. And I could climb up in that tree really easily and climb all in that tree. Man, I was so excited. Now that place was going to be my pleasant place. Boy, I was thrilled. But a better opportunity came along. And Dad ended up selling that lot to some family friends that we knew, and something completely different happened. But boy, I had dreamed about life in that house, dreamed about life in that neighborhood, dreamed about life on that lot, but it didn't happen. Because God did something different. He did something better. He did something more pleasant than I could possibly imagine. David knew all about great land, grand palaces, plenty of riches. But at 61, as he was in trouble and he was praying, all the pleasant places that he thought he wanted had changed. And he discovered that the most pleasant, firm, foundational place on earth was the road that led to heaven. And that it was the lot and lines of his inheritance with God that mattered the most. He expressed that reality again in verse 6. Indeed, my inheritance is beautiful to me. Beautiful. Not just average, not just ho-hum or humdrum, not groovy cool or vibing. I mean, this was more than he could imagine. He came to understand that his inheritance with God, that him knowing God and God knowing him, his rightness with God was the greatest, most satisfying reality in his life. And at 61, as he had experienced so many things, he discovered, this is it. My inheritance with God is everything that I need. It is the most beautiful, mesmerizing, wonderful thing that I have. In 1780, John Adams took two of his sons, John Quincy and Charles, with him on a diplomatic mission to France. Our country had not even celebrated her fourth birthday yet. Still a very young country. But John Adams, like so many of our other founding fathers and founding mothers, was focused, had a passion that our country become something beautiful and valuable and purposeful in the world and for the world. On May 12, 1780, he posted a letter from Paris to his wife Abigail, describing the beauty of the palaces, the beauty of the gardens, the beauty of the countryside. And he wrote this: I could fill volumes with descriptions of temples and palaces, paintings, sculptures, tapestry, porcelain, etc., 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 if I could have time. But I could not do this without neglecting my duty. The science of government is my duty to study, more than all other sciences. The art of legislation and administration and negotiation ought to take place, indeed to exclude in manner all other arts. He was focused. And then he said this: I must study politics and war, that my sons may have liberty to study mathematics and philosophy. My sons ought to study mathematics and philosophy, geography, natural history, naval architecture, navigation, commerce, and agriculture in order to give their children a right to study painting, poetry, music, architecture, statuary, tapestry, and porcelain. In other words, one of our founding fathers in the early days found himself making a commitment that he must do his part to create a structure of beauty and safety and freedom so that his children and grandchildren could enjoy what it means to be free. In that same sense, David is writing this prayer, praying this prayer, along the same lines. He's praying in such a way that in a time of trouble, he's trying to create a message of beauty, a message of safety, a message of freedom for his children and his grandchildren and me and you. And that message, in his own words, is if you want to be safe, If you want to be free, then make the Lord your inheritance, your portion, your cup, because that is the only cup that will satisfy your soul, satisfy your deepest thirst today, tomorrow, and forever.